Have you been listening to the podcast and getting value from the show? If so, I've got a small favor to ask, because over the next few months, we're going to be making some changes to better serve you. Now, I could keep creating episodes based on what I think would be most helpful, but I would much rather get this right. So instead of guessing, I want to understand where you are right now and the real challenges you, your organization, and your team are facing. That's why I've put together a very short 90-second survey. It'll help me better understand you and how I can serve you at a much higher level. And as a thank you, the first 30 people who complete it will receive a free signed copy of one of our books. To take part, just go to the show notes and click the link titled Leadership Survey. Or you can go directly to letsgrowleaders.com/podsurvey. PODSURVEY. It'll take less than 2 minutes. I really appreciate your input. It will genuinely help shape the future of the show.
For me, intention is very different than a goal or an objective. So a goal or an objective, now they could have overlap between them, but goals and objectives tend to benefit you or benefit a thing or an entity. An intention stretches over the needs of every individual that it affects and pulls people together.
Hey, it's David, and you're listening to Leadership Without Losing Your Soul, your source for practical leadership inspiration, tools, and strategies you can use to achieve transformational results without sacrificing your humanity or your mind in the process.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the show. I am just delighted to introduce our guest to you today. His name is Chad Littlefield, and he's the co-founder and chief experience officer of We and Me, an organization whose mission is to help leaders, educators, and events make connection easy. Forbes has called Chad a global expert on asking questions that build trust and connection in teams. He's a TEDx speaker, best-selling author, the creator of Connection Toolkit, which is now being used to create conversations that matter on campuses and companies in over 80 countries around the world. Chad and his late partner, Will Wise, are the authors of Ask Powerful Questions and How to Make Virtual Engagement Easy, both of which have been number one Amazon bestsellers. And Chad, welcome to the show. I'm not done with my introduction, though, but I got to stop, pause, and say welcome to Leadership Without Losing Your Soul.
I am very grateful to be here with you.
I am grateful that you're here, too. So the rest of the, you know, I have to give you the formal introduction, but I got to tell our listeners that, you know, doing the work I do, speak at a lot of conferences, attend a lot of conferences, see a lot of people, and had the opportunity, by the time this episode airs, it's going to be almost a year exactly since we met in person, because Chad was keynote speaking and emceeing, helping facilitate a conference that I was attending. And so I keep a short list, but listener, I got to tell you, of all of the folks that I have seen keynote and MC, if I were to make a top five list historically, and Chad doesn't know I'm about to say this, but Chad, you're on that list, top five I have ever experienced in terms of impact, lasting memory, and the practical ways that I think about and use what you share. So I really am delighted to have you on the show today.
Wow. That second intro is the one that I send to my mom. It'll make her blush. Thank you.
It's those second intros that I try to keep a hold of myself too. They're the ones that, well, that goes to something we're going to talk about later, which is the power of that second question. But before we get to any questions and connection and all the rest of it, one of the questions that I ask every guest on the show, and it's a way that I like to learn a little bit more about you and our listeners do, and it ties into leadership, is taking yourself back in memory to your earliest memory of yourself as a leader. What is that memory? What's your earliest memory of yourself as a leader?
Ooh, it's interesting. This, I don't know if this is my earliest memory of being a leader, but it's pretty darn baked into my story as well. And it was my mom, actually, is she likes to say she graduated in the top five of her class at Ohio State because there were only five people in her class. She studied medical illustration. So Ooh. She's like a doctor at a teaching hospital would say, hey, I need an image from or a picture from a hand-drawn picture from a surgery at this stage in the surgery from this angle. And she would draw it. And so when me and my two younger siblings played doctor, like make-believe doctor as kids, my mom would draw these wild open wounds on our arms, on our legs, and then we would have to dress them wounds. And so this one particular time, my younger brother, who's 4 years younger than me, had this big gaping wound on his forearm. And my mom remembers, as I go to treat it, I wasn't worried that he was going to bleed out. I was like, do you want Jell-O? Do you need a pillow for your head? I was so concerned with how he was feeling in the moment, like totally uninterested in the clinical side of things, which is funny because fast forward a bunch of years, I saw the movie Patch Adams with Robin Williams, where Robin Williams basically becomes a doctor to promote the quality of life over quantity. And he is not the best clinician, but he just had a way of really connecting with people. And when I saw that movie, I thought I had my entire life figured out. I was thinking, like, definitely med school, probably pediatrician, but I'm going to be Patch Adams. but then I took a chemistry class in college and was like, Ooh, this is not going to work out very well. I traced back to that original moment, and my dad, who was a doctor, supported me all along my entire life in the journey to be a doctor. But underneath, he was like, there's no way Chad's going to be a doctor. He wants to work on people's brains, not on people's bodies. And sure enough, it kind of turns out that that's what I do anymore. But in terms of leadership, I think my late partner, Will, used to define leadership as making something happen that wasn't going to happen anyway. And so I think that was one of the first times that I can remember where I was making something happen for Ben, right? I was like trying to make his experience better. I'm not sure that I saved his life in that moment, but I was making something happen that wasn't going to happen anyway.
And that sense of connection has played through all these years later and all of the work you do, hadn't it?
Yeah, which is, it's fun that you asked that question. I didn't know that you asked that question to all guests, but I had a teacher of mine say, actually, when you're speaking, if possible, if you can tell a story from a time when you were younger than 10 years old, where you were in some essence doing, or where in some essence you were who you are today, back then, it is a way to completely skip the audience's prefrontal cortex, the part of our brain that allows us to rationalize and justify and et cetera, and goes straight to the heart. And like, you can't disagree with that story. You're not saying like, well, Chad, really did that happen? No, like you're just there believing I am who I am in this moment. And there's something really compelling about the idea. So I'm gonna have to go back and listen to the beginning of all your episodes.
And see, this is what happens every time I talk to Chad is that, you know, there's something that I'm doing and I, you know, learn. And then he's got the research, the rationale, the underpinning neuroscience, and then some other fun, awesome ways to do it. That's just every conversation we have. It's one of the reasons I value the relationship. Oh, that's awesome. So, okay. So we've got that sense of connection, wanting to be Patch Adams. And, you know, so I don't know that, we had talked about that in that way before, of what led you to this work and writing Ask Powerful Questions. I'm wondering if there were, in addition to that, like core desire that you've had that sounds like from childhood, are there any other incidents or events that have occurred in your life that led you to pursue this work? Not everybody goes into this work, even people who want to connect and make the world better and help people in the ways that you do.
Yeah, it's a fun and timely question to answer because I've been rethinking the core of my work. So I thought that I was all about connection, and I'm actually starting to wonder if I'm actually all about risk. And the reason that is one of the starting point in some ways, or like the most direct starting point that led me to getting a TEDx talk about 10 years ago. So I was like I was just coming out of college 10 years ago and was invited to give a TEDx talk because of some work that I had done in college. And the idea or the topic of the talk was on positive social risks. But the spark for that, all of that, came from me attending a Cirque du Soleil show in college. So freshman year, go to a Cirque du Soleil show, really amazing, cool, entertaining. They handed out clown noses to every single person in the audience. And just purely out of curiosity, as I was walking back to my dorm, I put the clown nose on just as a social experiment to see what would happen, how would people react. And quite a bit to my surprise, because I didn't know what to expect, 100% of the people that I passed made some sort of positive response, had some sort of positive response. So even if it was just like a quiet, subtle smile, like, hey, I'm kind of afraid to interact with strangers, but here's a subtle smile, or, oh my goodness, where'd you get that? Or a laugh, or a, like, I need to meet you. Some positive reaction all along the way. And I think that taking that definition of leadership I mentioned earlier, making something happen that wasn't going to happen anyway, I think that true connection and connected leaders and leaders who prioritize relationship in their teams, it's about taking some level of social risk to make something happen in a relationship that wasn't. Because it's very easy to show up to work and ask, how was your weekend? How are the kids? Ask the same few questions every single weekend. It takes risk to show up and say, I was going to ask you, how was your weekend? But I'm actually a little bit more curious if you're willing to share what's something that like you were kind of struggling with or took up a lot of brain space for you this weekend. That's a risk to ask a question that, especially if you're a leader and you have a title or a position of power in some way, because that, you know, it affects the dynamics of like, okay, can I answer this question? How much do I share? Like all of that starts to come into play. However, if you just ask, how was your weekend? You're going to get very little results. If you take some risks, you're likely to get a result. In the same way that I think it was New York State's lottery tagline at one point of like, you got to be in it to win it. I think the same is true with the, I've been doing a lot of work around this idea of the conversational lottery lately, that like every conversation could be a good one, a really, really good one, but not necessarily. The good news is though that like we get to affect whether or not it's a good one. Like we get, there's a lot of things that we can do to edit a conversation live as it's happening and make it either not a winner or not.
Well, I am not a marketing genius. My talents are in other areas. So I don't know whether risk or connection or what's going to be the right thing for you going forward. But what I do appreciate and what is occurring and popped up for me as I read your book, as I was thinking back through our conversations and preparing for our conversation today, is the risk involved. Because there's the risk of outlay of energy. I need to listen in a different way when I ask what was consuming your brain this weekend than, hey, how was your weekend? I need to listen differently. I don't know what's my next response is going to, I can't possibly know what my next response is going to be. So there's a risk in showing up for that, in that, how am I going to respond to whatever they say? What if it's really bad? What if it's really good? What if I have no frame of reference? You know, all of those are risks that are just for that one question that you're considering. And yet what's possible as a result of that seems pretty powerful.
I need to write this down, actually. I feel like what you sparked for me there is the realization that once you take risk, you also take on some responsibility for that. So if you're choosing to ask somebody a question, you have the responsibility of holding their answer. And that's important. That's an important responsibility to take on. But it makes me like risk even more, because when we take calculated physical risks, we usually accept the responsibility of the outcome of that. So when I went skydiving, I had to sign a paper that said, even if my instructor intentionally detached me and I died, they're not at fault, right? So I'm taking on literally all of the responsibility in that case. And I wonder if in relationship, if that's if it's a little bit overboard to say you take on all of the responsibility, because it takes two to tango. But yeah, interesting.
And listeners, you're watching us explore and develop thinking as it's happening here. I love
idea creation. Yeah, this is disclaimer. This is not absolute truth. We are actively thinking about what's happening next,
and hopefully causing you to actively think about your conversations and what level of responsibility and risk you're willing to engage in. The reason that I appreciate that so much is experiential, and this is one of the services that Chad provides, and you do a number of different things, but hosting events, keynoting, facilitating, and creating an experience for people. And that was my first experience of you, was you engaged the audience in asking one another questions, which was powerful, and we'll get into the kinds of questions. But there was a principle that you then followed up with about asking a question in response to whatever you heard.
Yeah.
And was so incredibly powerful, and watching groups of strangers who didn't know it and creating connections in such a moment that somehow also mitigated the risk involved. And so it's like, so if we're going to extend our risk metaphor, there's risk, but then there's risk mitigation and how we manage through that. So let's talk about this concept of second question.
Yeah. Okay. So part of the reason that you felt risk was mitigated, that was very intentional on my behalf as I was leading that. And one of the things I would say, or that I've noticed in the leaders that I work with, really, really, really phenomenal leaders assume some of the social risk for their people to have really good conversations. So that might be saying, hey, we just had to lay off 20% of the company, and that feels really terrible. Can you all like link up with somebody who you feel comfortable talking with at the company and just go out to lunch, like have a debrief, be able to unpack, like talk about this. This is not something that we should just like bottle up and keep inside always.
Yes.
Right. So as a leader saying that, a very difficult conversation in context, et cetera. But that leader in that moment would have been assuming the social risk so that people didn't have to check it. I don't know if that was the best off the cuff example, but just in general, when we met and I was giving this keynote, for context, I gave everybody one of these We Connect cards that have very intentional questions crafted on them. And so in round one, it was just ask the person your question, swap cards, and pair up with somebody else. That was the mechanics. In round two, I said, essentially, this is the too long didn't read version, but I said essentially, one really good way to trick your brain into listening to understand and listening with intent to really, you know, set aside your own life experience for a minute and just be present to theirs. One way to trick your brain into doing that is simply to respond in a sentence that ends in a question mark. So ask your question, hear their response, and then respond in a sentence that ends in a question mark. In other words, ask a second question, ask a follow-up, ideally rooted in your natural curiosity. Asterisk, right? So the power in that is that when you ask somebody a really good question based on what they said, you're communicating multiple things in that one question. So you could just reflectively listen what they said and said, oh, this is what I heard you say, and they would feel heard. But when you ask a follow-up question, you're saying, I heard what you said, and I'm curious to double-click on this and know a little bit more, right? You're also communicating that you have interest in their life, right? So there's a certain leaning in. You actually want to know more. And it's not even, notice you didn't ask like, what's the power of the third question, the fourth question, the fifth question? It just two. And the reason that's so powerful is when we were writing the book, we researched how many questions kids ask versus adults. So kids on average ask 300 to 400 questions per day between the ages of 2 and 5 years old. Whereas adults tend to ask 6 to 12. And so our question count has gone down so much that if you were to have Otter AI or Zoom record your entire day, your entire conversation, and spit back how many questions were asked, they'd be so few that the pattern of conversation was sentence that ends in a period, sentence that ends in a period, sentence that ends in a period, sentence that ends in a period. And so when you ask not only one question, but then a follow-up question rooted in your curiosity, it's a social risk because it doesn't happen very much, so it's abnormal, but it also makes people think and it disrupts the flow of things. And so if you are not interested, if you're interested in business as unusual and creating something different, improving, making something better, the power of just asking a second question and choosing to flip that curiosity switch is pretty great. And depending on the context that it's asked, right? If you're asking questions that could build deep in relationships of trust, cool. If you're asking a second question that could further explore a quiet person's idea, really cool. If you're asking a second question that turns over a stone that would otherwise just be this elephant in the room or this conflict breeding ground in a relationship, and you ask that second question that helps turn over a couple more stones, half the power leaves it, right? Half the power leaves the dynamic or issue there. So yeah, it's a teeny little thing, just a sentence, like 9 words with a question mark at the end. Two questions asked in sequence. Very powerful.
Second question, rooted in your curiosity. Incredibly powerful. One of the things that, thinking of that experience, and it's a principle that I have tried using in my own life repeatedly, Chad, still working at it, still leveraging the gift I received there. One of the things that occurs to me is, as we talk about taking the risk for that and the responsibility for that conversation, if it's rooted in natural curiosity, there may be discomfort, but it alleviates in terms of the response. I'm not exactly sure how to say what I'm even asking here, but it seems like it alleviates responsibility for a particular outcome. I am opening myself to the moment, to the experience of this person and their reality or their thinking or this problem. Doesn't mean I'm going to have an answer, but from a leadership perspective, how much better to open all the hearts and minds to whatever it is that we're doing, whether that's relationship or problem or whatnot. I'm curious, I guess, if you are familiar, if you thought about research behind that, the discomfort aspect of entering into that ambiguity of discomfort for folks who maybe are a little more driven on that. I just want to know what I know and deal with what I deal with.
Yeah, I think there, just be curious is the like audible 3x speed version of a little bit longer explanation where I would say you got to be empathetically curious. So if you turn people into the objects of your curiosity, and you're following your curiosity purely because you're curious and you want to know, that can be a problem in relationship. And in fact, in some, I think it's, remember what language, like Dutch or in some languages, when you translate curiosity, it has connotations around nosiness. I used to work with a guy named Kalen Blakeney, who he would, what was the quote? A conversation without self-disclosure is an interrogation. And so it's this idea of like inviting people to be curious. I'm not inviting people to ask 12 questions in a row back to back. I'm inviting people to ask a follow-up question because it stops short of interrogation, gives you space to, you know, still contribute a piece of yourself to the conversation. The other thing, there is a power in saying, being able to state, I'm just curious, and then ask your question afterward. It can be, depending on the context, a very disarming way of stating an intention of I'm asking this because I'm just curious. Sometimes you can say that though and say like, oh, I'm just curious. And really what that means is like, I have this major judgment about what you've done. And so I just want to ask, I'm just curious, why'd you do this stupid thing? And so—
Why are you such an idiot?
Yeah. And so actually the first chapter of the book, Ask Powerful Questions, which you would think would be, here's how to ask powerful questions, chapter one. Chapter one is actually on being clear about your intent and sharing it with the people that it affects. Yeah. And so when you're about to ask a question, that question can become much more powerful if you just get clear on your intent as to why you're asking it. And so especially if you're in a position of power as a leader, right? So if somebody walks into my office and say, hey, I see an immense potential in who you are and emerging, and I see you in like senior roles at this company. And so I've got a question that is a little bit out of character, but a little bit out of the norm that I want to ask, and my intent is asking it is I want to help grow and develop you and then land no matter how hard that question is that you're about to ask, the intent is clear. And they're not wondering like, okay, this person's not trying to mine information out of me so that they can get me fired. They actually want to grow and develop me. If I trust that intention, obviously.
Right. If it's sincere and trustworthy.
Which is a whole other podcast. But yeah. Does that harp on, or that get to the core of what you're asking about, this kind of risk versus reward dynamic between asking a question as a leader?
It does. And I think there were probably like five or six different cores. And I'm glad that you chose one, because that was... In terms of podcast hosting, that was not necessarily the most astute question I've ever asked, but your what you do gets me thinking. And so sometimes it just, we babble it out the way that it...
No, it was a great one. And I think sometimes the most fun podcast for me to listen to as a podcast consumer as well are the ones where you feel like that was totally an unscripted moment where you're just like... In fact, actually, when really... unaffected natural curiosity ekes out of people, it wakes people up, like wakes a meeting up. So we mentioned before we hit record that I've just had my mind exploded by ChatGPT, which by the time this is published, will probably have taken over the world, in my humble opinion. But, you know, I'm so curious about that right now. That curiosity actually has a bit of an energy to it. And I'm not a person who uses the word energy in this context, but there's a way that I'm so voraciously curious, it's actually a bit infectious, in the same way that you know, when you're watching a movie and there's a lot of sad people crying over sad things, you didn't experience those things, but you cried because you got these mirror neurons in your brain. And so your brain is firing the same kind of stuff as the people in the movie. And so you might cry, even though you didn't lose your fill in the blank, right? Not really sure where I was going with that. That got a little dark
there.
When
people are, when there's curiosity in a conversation and you're listening to and genuine curiosity comes in, it fires our own mirror neurons and livens up the meeting, the conversation, the what have you.
Right. That natural curiosity is a bit infectious. Not necessarily even, it might not make other people curious, but it will, people will be like attracted to that idea of like, oh, this person like really cares about that. And if the curiosity is directed toward a person, the sentiment is, oh, this person really cares about me. So if I got really myopically focused and curious about taxidermy, people would assume that I care about taxidermy. It's no different for a person. If I got really myopically curious and focused on a person, they would assume that I care about that person. Mm. In a work context, you just want to make sure it's not so much care that it's weird. Like, absolutely. There is a balance there.
Yeah. And what makes it weird or not really goes to, as you said, intention. What are we starting with? And where's that coming from? Which is a great segue into some of the concepts in the book. And I want to get as practical as we can here in the time that we have. We've been talking conceptually about the power of conversation and taking the risk to ask these kinds of questions. And this notion of intention, and by the way, listeners, Chad has a gazillion videos and they're pretty much all worth watching. You're going to learn something and you're going to have so many practical takeaways. But one of them that I have enjoyed in the last couple of months is one about intention. It's come up in my feed randomly, however these things happen, once or twice. And the power of starting conversations with intention. So you just mentioned one example, prefacing some curiosity that you're coming to a conversation with. But you also share that it's possible to talk about incredibly challenging, difficult things, starting with intention. Mm. And how leaders, well, let's get to the principle first, and then how we might actually go about that, how we might use that principle.
So first of all, like a foundational level, the reason that getting clear about your intent and keyword and sharing it with the people that it affects is so impactful is we live in a very busy world. And if you're listening to this, you're probably busy too. And so rarely do we actually pause long enough to get clear about our intentions before we set a meeting or before we say something to a person or before we write an email. We don't actually like sit down and set a 60-second timer and say, what is my intention for this, right? We just do it and hope for the best. So first of all, there's power in just that, like getting clear about your intent. Sharing it with the people that it affects is the important part, though, because when we have intentions that affect other people and we don't clue them in to those intentions, that is manipulation. Fundamentally, right? Having an intention that affects somebody else and not bringing them along for the ride is manipulation, which is a word that most modern leaders try to sprint away from. And yet, subtly, I think we do it all the time because we have intentions. I want this person to grow and develop. And so I'm going to ask them really hard questions, or I'm going to give them this extra project, etc. What if you said to the person beforehand, hey, I actually want you to grow and develop. I see you in a major leadership role at this company in the future. And so I'm going to give you some extra stuff on your plate. And I'm going to push you a little bit harder as we go along, right? All of a sudden, pushing harder and giving extra assignments is rooted in an extremely mutually beneficial intention. And so the power is, that person, when they hear your intent, it's simply an invitation. Do you want to play this game or not? You're saying, this is the game I'm playing. And that person then gets to say, yeah, I'm in. Or maybe I'm not so in. The other element to this is, for me, intention is very different than a goal or an objective. Mm. So goal or an objective, now they could have overlap between them, but goals and objectives tend to benefit you or benefit a thing or an entity. An intention stretches over the needs of every individual that it affects and pulls people together. And so what I mean by that is, let's say you're having a meeting and the goal is to get alignment. Let's get alignment on this project. We need to get on the same page. That would be a very common but meaningless goal.
Yep.
My little trick or invitation to switch that goal into an intention is, we need to meet to get alignment, to all get on the same page. And then I want you to add two words to the end of the sentence. So that, dot, dot, dot. And then right after you say so that, fill in that sentence with a currency that those people care about. So this is not as complex as it sounds, right? We need to meet and get on the same page and get aligned with this project so that everybody can leave work at 5 o'clock with absolutely nothing on their brain and they can be present with their families. So you see that we're totally meeting about a project, but I've put in a currency that I know this group is going to care about, which is keeping work and balance and life balanced together in some way, or keeping them in harmony.
And it occurs to me that in doing that, going back to what you mentioned earlier, is it has to be trustworthy. It has to be sincere. Not that I'm going to I'm going to achieve some 100% superhero standard of perfectly following through on that, but that by and large, my heart and my actions need to align around, and I'm going to follow through that we really can go home at 5 and think about our families and not the project.
Yeah. Yeah. And the, you're absolutely right that it has to be realistic and believable. I think it can be aspirational, but it needs to be clear that it's aspirational. So I take on 1 to 2 mentoring clients that are other speaker, author, facilitator, trainer types per year. And it's a really intense, immersive mentoring. I'll invite them on planes along with me to go fly and work with clients, and we'll meet together. And part of the intention of that program is to help them in wherever they are in their practice, double their impact and their income. So can I guarantee that? No, because that person has, they got to do a lot of work to get there. And I can't make them do that work. But when that intent is really clear and it benefits them, and it also, that benefit stretches to include others, right? There's something compelling that brings us together and we can anchor back to that. So it doesn't, I guess what I'm saying is your intention doesn't need to be tiny or small. It can also be big. But something realistically striving for. If I said, my intention is to help you run a $1 billion speaking practice, less realistic, right?
My intention is to get all of us out of here by 10 a.m. every day.
Yeah.
Right. So aspirational and sincere, sincerely aspirational with, I'm adding this, you didn't say this, but my take, with some demonstrated ability to follow through, back to leadership credibility. And it goes back to also what you were talking about earlier, that definition of leadership of, you know, I think in my way of saying it, you know, I have to give us years again. My way of saying it was, you know, together we can create a better tomorrow. It's, we can build a tomorrow that doesn't exist yet. So aspirationally, that's our intention for this, whatever this is that we're doing. If we can, if I can get clear on that, I can share it with the group, spread it. It's got to be in the currency that affects everyone. From there, now we have at least a foundation, a context in which to engage.
It serves a context, or a metaphor I'll use is like an anchor. So no doubt if you're working with a group of people to accomplish something, you're going to run into some conflict or frustration at some point, or even more likely some major disagreement about how to get there. This is true in my own marriage. So we want to raise healthy, beautiful, smart, intelligent, compassionate kids. Lots of disagreements on how we get there. And so when we have disagreements of how we get there, our intent, we can come back to our intent as an anchor. And I actually had a mentor of mine, Jeff Hayes, who he was is a counseling psychologist, and he does coupling. His wife is also a counseling psychologist, and they'll do couples counseling together. And we went out to breakfast, me and Kate, my wife, went out to breakfast with him once, and he gave us the challenge or invitation of when you're in a hard conversation with somebody, let's say you're out at a restaurant, actually get up and sit on the same side of the booth as them, and to physically represent, like, we actually want the same thing. We're actually moving toward the same thing here. I think that's what intentions actually do without physically getting up and sitting next to a colleague, because that could be a little creepy. So your intent is serves as that anchor to come back to. So when you're in the midst of disagreement, to say, okay, we don't know if the walls need to be pink or green, but we do want fill in the blank, right? We do want that intention piece. You can also, it serves as both an anchor and a filter. Does what we're talking about right now help us accomplish our intention? And if the answer is no, then maybe you can redirect that conversation.
All right, so we're talking with Chad Littlefield, author of Ask Powerful Questions. Chad, you also have a product, and I'm sorry, I got a shortcut here because we're running low on time, and there are so many different things I want to get to. You have a product, and you mentioned it earlier, called We Connect Cards. And these are a series of cards. It's exactly what they sound like, each with a different question on them. And then on the back, there's yoga poses and stretches and all kinds of fun things. And you mentioned one of them earlier. I have been using these for ever since we met. There's so many good questions. And I would encourage, and we'll find out where to get all that, I'd encourage folks to get a hold of one of these. But there's a lot of research that goes into what makes a good question. And you've done that work for people to shortcut the process so that they've got something usable. But when we're thinking about, I mean, just in the moment, what is it that makes a good question that creates opportunity for conversation, creates opportunity for connection or genuine curiosity and mutual exploration?
So a couple little like learnings. So when I developed the deck and the set of questions, I actually did it in the midst of grad school, and I turned it into a published research paper. So I actually did my master's thesis and published that on the development of these 60 questions and testing them. And so there were a couple things. And so I, you know, showed them before the final question list landed, had tested them with dozens of groups, and I actually had them sort them into three buckets. Keep this question, it's awesome. Yellow, like, you might need to edit this question a little bit, and then put it in the red pile, like, this is just a terrible question. Please don't ever ask me that again. And I did that over and over and over and over again, had groups sort them until 95% of the questions were landing in the green or some in the yellow, and you're never going to please anybody, so there's always a question or two in the red. Things that made questions better. So we took out questions like, what is a crucial ingredient to true happiness? Because it's a little bit too lofty to make a personal connection. We kept questions like, what is one of your favorite memories? And you notice the words that I just emphasized. What is one of your favorite memories? If you ask, most people, when they go to ask questions, tend to ask superlatives, like, what's your favorite question? Or what's the best memory? What's the best part of your trip or your favorite song? Don't do that. it's too hard for people to choose and to come up with. And so if you want to keep conversation rolling and organic and open up to more possibilities, add one of, and it makes it a little bit more specific. What is one of the solutions you've thought about to this problem instead of what is the best solution to this problem? We're not qualified to know what the best or the worst is typically. Mm. Or it's like a weird arbitrary scale. So that's one. Just add that one of piece to it. The other element is almost every question in the deck begins with either what or how, those two words. No questions begin with why. Because if your goal is to build a relationship of trust, asking why questions tends to put people on the defensive. It's a very scientific question. So if I said, why did you get a job here? Why do you work here? I need to then rationalize my existence in this company, right? Not really super inspiring. Now, socially, like as kids, we ask so many why questions. We also get used to answering why questions. And so, you know, most contexts, people are going to answer why questions and you're not going to notice the difference. But subtly, there is this level of judgment going. And so what and how questions just really tend to open it up. Now, there are lots of traps you can fall into with that we don't have time for now. But ask a question that begins with what or how. Make it specific enough, maybe add one of, and make sure that it's rooted in your curiosity. That seems like a hard recipe for a question, but I think that can all be done in about 12 seconds, and then you can eke out your sentence that ends in a question mark and change your conversation.
It certainly can, and I know because I've got one sitting in front of me right now. What made you smile in the last 2 weeks?
Oh... I've got a 3-year-old Otto, and yesterday at about 4:30 in the morning, he comes into my our bedroom, and I hear, "Hey, Dada," and then he holds up his hand right to my face and says, "Sticker hands." He can't say S's in the beginning of words. Sticker hands. He had meticulously placed 5 stickers, 1 sticker on each of the tips of his fingers. He just hold it up straight to my face. Dada, sticker hands. created quite a awesome laugh.
It made you laugh. So what do you think was his motivation? Was he like showing off his new superhero power or?
Oh man, I am wondering about that. I often look at things he does and says and wonder, like, what is going on inside his brain that, like, made him say that out loud, unprompted? Like, where did that come? What is the origin of that thought? I remember taking a cognitive neuroscience class in college, and the professor started out by saying, just so you know, I'm going to teach you an entire semester about cognitive neuroscience, brain science. Just so you know, to be clear, there isn't not one cognitive psychologist who will tell you or claim to know what a thought is. We still don't know. Mm. Right. And so it's like, and now we're going to learn a bunch of stuff. But it's that idea of like, yeah, it's a mystery. I have no
idea.
It's
just fascinating. So fascinating with the grandchildren, the same thing at that 2.5, 3 years. It's like, wow, what is going on in there? It's so amazing. All right, we're talking with Chad Littlefield, co-founder, chief experience officer of We and Me, and you can find him at weandme.me, I should say. Got to get that right. And author of Ask Powerful Questions, How to Make Virtual Engagement Easy. So many things we haven't got to yet, Chad. I'll give just one or two more questions, but if you can tell us where else can we connect with you or give us that website again? Where do we find your books? What all? You've got so many different resources for people.
Yeah, I just cannot recommend. Search Chad Littlefield on YouTube and get about 400 video tutorials and click the title that you're most curious about and follow your natural curiosity there. The way that I've recorded those is the title of nearly every video that I publish is a question that somebody has asked me in some way, shape, form, or context. And the video is my attempt at the most useful, practical answer. And so you can find question that you're curious about and listen to the answer there. You can also type in weand.me/tools, and I give a bunch of free stuff away. Those are all free resources. So you can get a free digital copy of the We Connect cards, an excerpt of Ask Powerful Questions, video tutorials and exercises, ideas, things that you can do within your own teams to play with some of the concepts that we talked about today. That's a good start.
cannot recommend these tools and resources highly enough. You'll definitely want to take advantage of those. We'll get those links in the show notes. Okay, Chad, we are at time. And that said, do you have a hard stop? We can keep it going?
No. Okay. Lightning round.
We lightning can't keep round.
Going, super long because I got promises to wives and kids.
Exactly. Okay. Lightning round. Your favorite three questions.
I'm going to cop out a little bit here and honor my late partner, Will, who before he died, I had cancer for 3 years before he died, died about a year ago. One of the greatest gifts that I think he left people around him and the planet are his three favorite questions. And they are, what is this moment teaching you right now? And I love that one because I remember meeting John Mackey, the co-founder and CEO of Whole Foods. And he said something I'll never forget over a lunch we were having. He said, imagine you walked through the world and everyone else except for you was enlightened. So the person that cuts you off on the highway, cut you off on the highway just to teach you patience. They were the enlightened one, and they knew that you needed to learn patience right now. And so that idea, what is this moment teaching you right now, is like a very practical thing to ask yourself and people around you to like make sure that life is constantly teaching you and you're getting lessons instead of just moving through activity. The second one is what brings you joy? And this idea that I haven't met anybody who can do anything for too long without it being fun before they burn out or quit. And so what brings you joy? Continuing to tap into that. And I think these are just as good self-reflective questions as they are outward questions as well. And then the last one, what is a crossroads you are at? And what about that is important? What is a crossroads you're at, and what about that is important? And I found in asking that, every single person you ask that to has an answer. They're at some crossroads, there's some decision point. And there's a lot of very cool research about how questions influence behavior. And I think sometimes a question like, what is a crossroads you're at, and what about that is important, is a way of like helping people make choices along the journey of life. And so when they articulate out that crossroads, oftentimes they end up being like, oh, now I know I need to go left. Now I need to know that I need to quit this job and get this one. Fill in the blank. Yeah.
And listener, I hope that you'll maybe replay that, because not only did Chad, did you share three incredibly meaningful questions, you also gave us the context of why they're so effective, some subtext around how and what we're thinking. Like there were three or four different layers in your answer there that were so fantastic and useful for all of us. Ways we can use them, the power of questions and what they do to help people or help ourselves without us having to do anything else. It's not about the direction, the guidance. Sometimes it's the right question. Love it. Okay, gosh, I've got to honor your time. One last one. Can we kill the icebreaker?
Okay, this is good. Here's an extra invitation to go subscribe to the YouTube channel. I have recorded a video. It's going to be my favorite video tutorial that I released to date. And I don't remember the release date, but it's been recorded. And in it, I had the video editors, or I've asked the video editors to bleep out every time I say the word icebreaker and replace it with connection before content. And this idea, this concept, the phrase of connection before content, which if you're listening to this, you're a clever person and you could just take that phrase and run with it. I'll give you a little explanation for it so you can hopefully make it a useful tool. And that is connection before content is not small talk chit chat before you ask them to send you a PDF, right? It's not about like just shooting the breeze beforehand. That's not connection before content. For me, connection before content is this concept that Peter Block talks about, that without relatedness, no real work can occur. So I could take a random group, a team of 10 people, and ask them to do a thing. And they would, something would happen, something would get done, but it probably wouldn't be very sustainable. It's unlikely that team would still exist or want to exist a year from now. Whereas this idea of connection before content, without relatedness, no work can occur. And so you shared, I think this was before we started recording, about, and I'll share anonymously, about a client who's very data-focused leader, kind of hard-nosed, who loves using these WeConnect cards. And for the data hard-nosed people, this idea of connection before content, if you want a team to be higher performing and to get more done, don't do this for that reason. but get your team to relate to each other and connect before you try to get anything meaningful done. And better yet, this is not like, okay, new team, we've got a day of team building outside the office. No, weave it in. Like, I wouldn't tell you to go work out for 40 hours in order to lose 20 pounds. You would just get injured, right? I'm going to tell you to, like, eat a salad every once in a while, go on a long walk Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and that'll keep you pretty healthy, right? Same thing for connection before content. Weave a connection question in before a meeting. Spend 5 minutes hearing somebody's response before you dive into the meat and the potatoes of what the meeting's about.
And there you have it.
Did I kill it?
You killed it. All right. You didn't just kill it, though. You replaced it. Connection before content. And
there you go.
With the relatedness before work. And so much more value. Listeners, I encourage you to connect with Chad. Go look him up. Those YouTube videos he mentioned, you will learn so much. Get the WeConnect cards. Chad gives you videos, 10, 20, I'm making this up now, 50 different ways to use them, but you'll get that same power as that CEO that he mentioned. All right, so many different opportunities. I think you've got a taste of just what Chad has to offer you as a leader and how to help you connect with your team more effectively, which leads to better relationships, more influence, better work together, better results, all the things that we're talking about. And of course, human-centered leadership starts with relationship. So ask those questions, ask those more powerful questions, find that second question rooted in your curiosity and be the leader you'd want your boss to be. Chad, thank you so much for being a guest with us today.
You are welcome. I would just leave everybody with the question, what is this moment teaching you right now?
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.